at breakfast, we were mentioning about not understanding the Buddha if people follow different ways or go to study other kinds of Dharma, or like Tibetan or Zen or other kinds of teachings, it shows they don't understand the Buddha. Would you say a little more about this?
Because since we understand that there is no self, no one at all, there are only different dharmas all the time in one's life, even right now. So this can be understood, that whatever is appearing now is not self. For example, we didn't think about seeing before at all while we had breakfast this morning. But now there is seeing, the same as that where we had lunch, had breakfast in the morning. See? So it's time to hear more and think more to understand seeing is not self. But since all dharmas are anatta, so it's impossible to try to have it. But to understand better and better about all realities are non-self. That's why each word should be studied carefully to really understand the characteristic of our reality right now, or right then, or anywhere.
So not understanding the Buddha means not understanding reality as anatta. And even though people may say, oh, well, this other teaching or teaches about anatta, but is it really about seeing now as anatta or just in general?
If one would say to try, you better try, but no understanding. So try what? Try to do what? Impossible. But the more there is understanding, one knows that there must be virya cittasika with that citta at moment of understanding. No need to try something different at all.
And as soon as there's any idea of trying, however little, it shows no clear understanding of reality as anatta. Because
yeah. And from morning up to now, there is no understanding of any reality at all. So thinking about the understanding which develops until there is no doubt and there can be understanding of any reality at any time by conditions. And now the conditions is accumulated each moment of understanding.
On the trying to have understanding or awareness, can we say the same thing applies also to trying to understand the teachings at intellectual level?
Because if one remembers that the teachings of the Buddha are all about detachment, not attachment at all. So avijja, ignorance, cannot see ignorance and attachment at all. But understanding can understand moment of attachment, so that right understanding turn away from following the attachment to different ideas and different knowledge about not understanding whatever appears now.
But in the case of trying to understand intellectually, it seems to be, can be just with attachment to thinking.
Certainly.
It's not wrong practice.
Is it not wrong?
It's attachment. Attachment, trying to figure out like a mathematical problem.
And
something
can
like
it
that.
Be done?
No, it's just attachment, but not necessarily a wrong practice, is it?
But what is behind that trying?
Attachment.
With?
With wrong self?
Definitely, clinging to an idea that the trying can be of some effect.
No, trying to understand, say, a concept such as khanda.
But it's not you who is trying at all. At the moment of understanding, there is virya cittasika. That's why, in order not to have wrong understanding and wrong practice or wrong path, Buddha pointed out virya, how many cittas virya arises with. So no need to do anything, because at this very moment there is Virya arising and falling away. No one can do anything.
Right. It's lopa is lopa. It's kusala. And the Virya is wrong effort. But I don't see a difference.
But what motivates such trying?
Lopa.
With?
It's definitely there, otherwise
there wouldn't be that kind of trying.
So if I try
to... It's self that's trying, for sure.
If I try to solve a mathematical problem, it's also self-view?
It depends on whether that moment did the Chetasika arise or not.
So it's not necessary?
Who knows? Only right understanding knows.
Same thing with when reading the Dhamma.
Any moment, we cannot know. This moment, previous moment, future moment, at all.
Because you may be just speaking conventionally.
Generally, when you talk about trying to solve the mathematical problem, so it's not a matter about the language, but if at this moment there is trying to understand, whether intellectually or at any level, then its self-view is there.
Trying to understand a particular concept when reading a Dhamma, say, concept of defilements.
Is it understanding which is trying?
It's not. It is trying. It is lopa.
Understanding.
I can agree with that.
With understanding.
No understanding.
But without understanding, can it develop to understand that?
No.
So there must be considering, wise consideration,
right.
Which is right understanding.
So when there's no considering, it has to be self-view? When there's no understanding?
It's like we are trying to find the word to suit, to fit with situation, but actually that cannot be known at all. But what can be known is that akusala citta arises with lobha, dosa, moha, and the other akusala cittasikas. That's all. So it's not just try to think about what one has heard with the idea of self, trying to find out. But actually, it's thinking carefully, wisely, to really get the meaning of what we heard.
Yes, but what I'm trying to find out is whether trying to find figure out the meaning of defilement, for example, is different from trying to find out the meaning of photosynthesis or something. It's just trying to see what the concepts point at. It's thinking with lopa. And
in the case of, for example, an academic who had no personal interest, that would certainly be the case, right? But then, if it's someone who understands that the Dhamma, or believes the Dhamma is the key to understanding, for example, then possibly the trying to understand the concepts is also tainted with the idea of developing the path.
It can happen, but not always. I mean, there are moments where it's just like any other concept.
Let's put it this way,
Sukhin. As soon as it's an idea of trying to know anything, then it's a misunderstanding that trying can have some effect. And that trying, it is the idea of I can try for sure. But it's not understanding that dharmas are conditioned. It's not understanding, as Jan said, that virya arises with almost every citta. It's the idea of I can try and that will bring the effect. If I puzzle over the meaning of this word, I'll understand it. So there is a misunderstanding.
You're reading a large body of texts. And there are many concepts that you come across. And some you don't understand. So within the context of one concept, in the context of other concepts, Just trying to figure out the meaning. Why should that be with self-view?
Do you have to think whether it's I or a right understanding? At moment of understanding, it's already reality, which consider wisely. No need to fight out at all. It's there by conditions. For example, right now, if there is the understanding, do you have to find out?
No.
And at that moment, if there's reading the text with wise consideration, there's no thought about trying to find out or trying to work anything out or...
Find more that I'm so forgetful and I think of many different things and no awareness at all. And then later I think, oh, I should. So that I forget that being so absorbed in objects is also anatta, but I forget.
For the cittanupassana sthipatthana, what citta can be the object of awareness? In a day.
So any citta is lobha, dosa, and moha.
Usually, the first one is lobha.
Lobha, yeah. So it's lobha. Because I like to think of many different other things.
But
like
when there is no understanding, it's lobha, which is unknown. But when there is understanding, it's lobha, a reality, not me.
Yeah, but I'm just forgetful, and I just forget it's also conditioned when we are so absorbed in other things.
And forgetfulness is avicca, and wanting to have it is lobha.
Yeah. I forget.
I?
Yeah.
Always come back, follow the teacher, lobha.
When we mind and forgetful in the mind, it's just more lobha, more clinging to oneself, minding, wishing it was another way, not wanting to be forgetful.
That's why it takes quite a long, long time.
And it seems
The more we listen and the more Ariyati grows, it seems a longer and longer and longer time.
And it seems like there's no awareness, but at moment of right understanding, it's the moment of developing right understanding of anattaness. Not just wanting to have it, no matter it arises or not, but Panya can see the anattaness. And this is the most precious moment to understand the anatta-ness of reality, not just want to have it. And this is the way to have less attachment.
You say at the moment of right awareness, but... it takes so long before there would even be right awareness.
But at moment of understanding, see, it's better than wanting to have awareness, because understanding is not enough condition the moment of awareness.
Of awareness, yeah.
So develop right understanding more and more to be conditioned.
Even intellectual level.
Any understanding. Yeah. Otherwise, the self try to select again.
Yes.
Is there viriyat now? Is there viriyat now?
There must be.
Yeah.
And I think, Sukhin, on the point of trying,
I think that we're talking about cheetahs, so different cheetahs, but you're talking about a whole situation or story and saying, well, in this situation is this or that. So one can't say in a certain situation it's this or that, so that's why it has to come back to the citta. Like now, if there is trying to know, trying to understand, for sure it's wrong practice at this moment. But if you say, oh well, in a whole situation when I'm doing a crossword puzzle, and then one's forgetting about the cheetahs, so one can't say.
Well, Ajahn said Vidya arises not just with Dithi, it arises with Lopa Mulichita without Dithi as well. So and I'm just saying that there can be lopa without Dithi.
The point she started off with was because we were talking about understanding the Buddha, and when people follow other ways or other kinds of teaching, it's not understanding the Buddha. And she mentioned the point, she stressed the point of whenever it's trying to understand, for example, or trying to be aware, which is very common, then it is wrong practice at those times. So that was the context. But then you mention other circumstances which are completely different, and I'm just saying, well, that's a whole story. But at this moment, if it is trying to understand, trying to be aware, thinking that one can do something to understand, then it is wrong practice at that moment. And that's why people turn away from the Buddha and the teachings, because of that self-view and trying to do or trying to understand.
And maybe I need to hear, remember that in Bonsai, you were very interested in this topic about the Dithi, the self-view, which is underlying, it's I forget the context, but it seemed you were there, you were interested, I remember. And it was similar to this, about Dithi being there even when we don't think it is.
I think it was the context also about Nina was a little surprised about how can be Sila Bhatta Paramasa even now, even a little trying to understand, trying to be aware, can condition ways or behaviours any time.
In asking questions too, I think it was in that context, certain, in the question, in a person asking question, you can see that it's attachment to self. Mm.
Yeah, I remember being interested in Dithi, and I remember this is the second time you've brought that up, so it may have stuck with you longer than it stuck with me, what we were actually talking about, but it doesn't seem odd to me that we can say that there is Dithi and we don't know it, because it arises with ignorance, right? So we don't know it. It would be after, and I that's all I can say. Sarah, do you have anything else you can say about that, or Ajahn?
Again, I don't think one can talk just about a situation, like when people ask question, it may be with wise considering, one can't.
That question rose
in that connection, yeah. So it's just common ordinary can arise any time, because clinging to self, an idea of I can or I can try or I can work it out, can arise any time.
And often. So often.
And if it's
strong enough,
then one will follow another practice or another way or look for a shortcut for sure. So that tendency is there.
But it arises subtly, very, very often in a day. I think so.
I think the context we're talking about particularly now is studying the teachings. And then you mentioned that one reason it's not recognized or noticed is that it arises with ignorance. But I think there's another reason too, and that is that it's characteristic of wrong view, that it thinks it's right view. So if we think it's a good thing to know more about the teachings and to know more about the concepts involved and that sort of thing, then we may be quite blind to the notion of self when we are pursuing that goal, as it were. And in this respect, one could say the person who has no interest in understanding the way things are would have less ditti than, or less opportunity for ditti, less likely to have wrong view of this kind than the person who has an interest in the teachings, because they just aren't bothered about finding out what the truth is.
Yes, I can see that. I think, yes, in that sense, but in the ordinary sort of everyday garden variety ditti, it'll be most of the time. If there's no interest in the Dhamma, or one hasn't heard the Dhamma, there is continuously an idea of self. I can do
most of the time, like when we're having breakfast and we're just enjoying the food and the conversation and the company, just attachment and ignorance, okay. Because it's not thinking about, it's not trying to be aware, not trying to understand, not thinking about the meaning of visible objects. So loba is much more common, or like children playing, or people who haven't, as Johnson said, studied the teachings, loba, much more common. One can't say ditti is there most of the time.
Is ditti then only in relation to the teachings and the path, the idea of trying to do something to move oneself along the path? That's full of ditti.
Wrong understanding. Wrong realities, wrong understanding of the khandhas of different dharmas. So for most people, they never think about reality or what is true, so no conditions for ditti to arise. But for those who have heard about dharmas and try to make awareness arise in one way or another, then that is ditti. Ditti becomes
common. So it seems that it is, from what you're saying, I'm picking up that it is only in relation to pursuing
the Dhamma,
to understanding the Dhamma,
life or truth,
reality. Or reality.
Understanding reality.
Or life.
Also. Okay, I was going to say devout Christians.
Yeah, that would be
full of it. Right.
And in terms of things entirely unrelated to that, though, mm-hmm. taking the impermanent for permanent would be an example of ditti. But I think just because we have the notion that there's a table, I don't think that necessarily implies ditti. Depends.
Yeah, probably I need some clarification for myself. When I take a sort of self, and then there is said that there are three different kind of defilement occurs within the self. That is self with wrong view, and the self with mana, and the self with attachment. Yeah. And now I somehow see these the differences among the three things, but when I somehow feel that there is me, mean that there is not, they are not just phenomena. No, no, they are not phenomena. They are things. So there is a self. And whenever I have that kind of idea, can we say that I have the notion of self with ditti? It's not phenomena. It's things, actually things. Oh, they are really things.
This is my book. It doesn't need to be any ditti. It's not Ajahn's book. It's not Jonathan's book.
No. When we take, say, things as sort of table or pen or glasses, then do I say that it's involved with the ditti?
It depends, like this is a table, maybe with or without ditti. Because conventionally it's correct, it is a table.
No. So it depends. It's much stronger feeling.
So if there's the idea this really is something, it is a table, then ditti.
Ditti, ditti. Yeah. Sometimes I have that feeling. No, they are not phenomena. They are things. And I have that doubt. And that doubt is caused by ditti. Can we say that?
Right. No. I mean, if at that time you were asked, for example, what does seeing see? Mm-hmm. Would you say that seeing see is a microscope? My microphone, sorry?
Yeah. I have that kind of strong sort of doubt. No, they are things. They are not phenomena. They are things.
Phenomena.
You mean dhammas? Well, for most of us, we don't think they are dhammas. I'm seeing dhammas. That table is dhammas or things like that. So just because one is not thinking in terms of dhammas, that doesn't, I think, necessarily connote wrong view. Because only with... In fact, if you try and think of things as dhammas or phenomena, that would be wrong view.
Sometimes I have a strong doubt or somehow self-conviction that it's momentary. No, they are not dhammas. They are things. And can we say that that kind of thinking is associated with wrong view?
Well, I think only the person who has the idea would be able to know whether it's wrong view or not. So I don't think you can generalize. But it's because I think I'm seeing a table. That doesn't mean it must be wrong. Yes. So what's the difference between that and your so-called strong conviction? What do you mean by the strong conviction?
Strong conviction means that much stronger idea that these are not realities, these are not dhammas, but they are actual things.
And that the table was dhammas.
It's momentary conviction, which is a momentary doubt.
But I'm saying the doubt, whether you think of the table as being dhammas or not being dhammas, I think both are equally not correct. So it could be. I suppose it's a question of how strongly you hold that idea.
No, it's not like holding that idea for years.
It's not like holding an idea
in a moment, 1 second.
Yeah. So that's momentary wrong view and condition, momentary doubt and different.
And you distinguish between moments of momentary doubt and forgetfulness. Which wouldn't necessarily be doubt, which wouldn't be doubt, just forgetting.
Of course, there is no self, no understanding, satyapanya at that moment. It's just a doubt and, strong. I think it's a very strong wrong view.
So you're saying that sometimes you suddenly think that the Abhidhamma is wrong and you think what it says about phenomena?
It's different. It's not something. There is some kind of idea. They are not real. Actually, I see and I hear, I taste things, not realities. Yeah. but it's momentary.
When I see myself on the mirror,
oh, there is Tadao. Looks good today, looks bad today. Love, this attachment, and conceive, and wrong view.
Different moments, because often when
just look in the mirror, it's just attachment,
one
about.
With a strong attachment, one with a mana, and the one with a
view.
So what you're saying that if we just perceive things as table, computer, and then these sort of perception is not necessarily associated with the wrong view, is what you're trying to say.
As I understand it, not necessarily, because the person who's enlightened will also conceptualize about things and no, this is mine that belongs to the other person, and this is a computer that's used for such and such.
The difference between the one and us in terms of perceptions, that their perception, or their experience of each moment must be associated with sati and panya. Is it not true?
I don't think so. No. But they have eradicated certain unwholesome tendencies, so the wrong view cannot arise for the sotapanna because it's been eradicated. It doesn't mean all the jitters are then gusala at all. Because sotapanna can still have strong agusala.
Well, not the arahant, of course, because
the arahant has eradicated all agusala.
Not each citta, but at least the citta which arises at the mind or sobhana. But kiriya associated with the sobhana, a cetasika.
Well, all of them, yes. But not for the sotapanna.
Yeah, how about arahat, associated with the sobhana, cetasika, but not necessarily with satyampanya?
Oh, well, previously you were asking about the enlightened person, so I was taking it from sotapanna upwards. But the arahant, all the mental factors, there wouldn't be any unwholesome mental factors. Yeah, so the mental factors are all the common ones or the sobhana ones. Yeah.
And sobhana.
And all sobhana have satya.
Okay, always associated with the sati and panya.
Well,
sati
always associated with a sobhana.
This is the point which I do not understand. So, for instance, the Buddha sees Sariputta as Sariputta, and he knows that Sariputta is here, but how does he perceive Sariputta as phenomena? Just phenomena, and I do not see the distinction, seeing phenomena as phenomenon, and then seeing.
Okay, let's forget about.
Okay.
Now, there can be moments of kindness or moments of metta, thinking of Anne or Nina. Sati is there, panya may or may not be there. Object is a concept. So it's not understanding of reality at that moment, but it's still kusala citta at this moment with metta. So it doesn't mean that every kusala citta that arises is with understanding. Every kusala citta that arises now must be accompanied by sati, but not necessarily with panya.
But take the extreme case of the Buddha, because for each moment, except for vivara cittas, cittas which arise at his mind or must be accompanied with at least sati and also panya, means that seeing reality as reality at each moment. No, is it not true?
No.
Buddha didn't have metta, karuna.
No, what I'm trying to say is he sees reality
what
as
about a
reality.
Of and then, Janachita, not
But
different
then how does he perceive this world? Just phenomena. And how does he create concept out of this phenomena? He knows that a concept is just concept, and he can clearly distinguish concept from realities. Yeah?
He doesn't confuse one for the other. I don't think it means, because the thinking and the conceptualizing is habitual. So it happens for the enlightened being just like it happens for us. It's not. He doesn't have to convert phenomena into concepts. So, like, the conceptualizing is a habitual tendency that's been accumulated for eons. When understanding is developed, the conceptualizing doesn't necessarily get less. There is just less taking one thing for another that it is not. But the pattern of thinking, like, you remember the sutta about the mind being like a monkey that leaps from one object to the next. That is the mind, whether it's the uninstructed worldling or the enlightened person. The mind flits around to different objects, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. And it's a lot of thinking in between the seeing and hearing. So conceptualizing, that doesn't stop. But there's less mistaking things for what they are not, so the reality of phenomena becomes clearer, but it doesn't mean the thinking slows down or that the world somehow appears as just phenomena and not as people and things, the conceptualizing.
What I think is that the Pandya, which arises for the Buddha, it will arise at intervals that would not break, you know, somehow break, stop the thinking. The thinking will still go on, even though there's Panya in between. That's, you know, just as in our case, there will be attachment, right, and ignorance. In his case, there's Panya. But this thinking is still going on, even for us now. Thinking is non-stop, right? So it's like that. The Panya arising doesn't stop the thinking.
Yesterday we were talking about the khandhas and the importance of sanya that is highlighted in that classification of dhammas. And sanya, I think, plays quite a role here, because what is habituated is remembered. So even, say, for the enlightened person, the arahat, when panya doesn't arise, it doesn't mean that there's ignorance, because ignorance has been eradicated. Panya has arisen a lot. And so the whole frame of reference, if you like, of the arahat is things are now perceived and remembered and habituated as they have been understood. And it's a bit the same for us. The reason why there's so much wrong thinking and so forth is because that's what's been accumulated, and that's how we remember the world.
How does he perceive Sariputta? He perceives Sariputta doesn't exist at all?
Well, it's like his own stream of jitters, which he knows directly, or the arahat knows directly, and so it is for the other. So this is the whole thing, that the understanding of what can be directly experienced can be seen to apply generally. So the more that's understood about one's own consciousness and dhammas generally, it comes to the stage where it is sufficiently general for it to be known that all dhammas, because I don't think any arahat ever experiences all dhammas, but the knowledge that is developed comes to the point. So sufficient dhammas are experienced, are seen as they are sufficiently frequently for it to be known that this is the general case.
So as the Buddha sees Sariputta as congregants of citta, cetasika, and rupa?
Well, he would see any other individual the same as he sees himself. What he's come to understand, and that goes for all of us, the extent to which we have understanding about the present moment of consciousness that arises, that's how we see other individuals also.
But do you understand, Tadao, for the Buddha to function, for him to teach, he must think in terms of Sariputta, his disciples, situations, teachings. So concepts, it's not like, for communication, for metta, for anything, there's a need for concepts, for need for thinking, right? So it's not like he would, because there's panya, he would just understand realities. And Jonathan was saying that these are accumulated, the habitual accumulation. So given that he's accumulated the habit of thinking, second, the habit of the sanya of who this person, that person is, so that won't stop. That will continue thinking about this person, that person. So there's no question about why he perceives Sariputta as Sariputta and another concept as that concept.
Like now, if there's metta for someone here or people here, it doesn't mean any idea that those people are there. Actually, it's just metta or trying to help when there's an opportunity or being friendly or taking care of someone's needs. But even so, one knows actually no one there, just citta, cetasika, rupa. But it doesn't mean not helping when there's an opportunity. But actually it's the others, cittas, that one is concerned about or cares about. No matter one calls it Nina or Jan, actually only citta, cetasika, and rupa.
So no, when the Buddha
has metta for everyone, or Sariputta has metta for everyone, no kind of confusion or doubt, that no misunderstanding, actually no one there at all.
Okay, so there is no one, yeah?
No one.
And there is aggregates. There are aggregates of citta-cetasika rupa, yeah? And that would somehow condition for the Buddha to perceive as a sort of an individual, yeah? But that notion of individuality or individual is totally different from our notion of individual, because we take individual as really somebody who actually exists.
It's a concept. The Arahat conceptualizes, but not with any conceiving, not with any attachment or ignorance or wrong view.
So there can be, like now, one moment of
friendliness or kindness, next moment there can be attachment, next moment understanding, just Dhamma, no one there, just different realities, seeing visible objects, sound, just different cittas at different moments. But just because there is kindness or helping someone, no misunderstanding, no wrong view at that time.
I think it's pretty much impossible for us to try and think how the Buddha conceptualizes or how the enlightened being conceptualizes, because the only way we know is what we have at the moment. I don't think it's helpful or productive, because it can lead to the idea of trying to conceptualize in that way which some people are inclined to do. So the path that the Buddha taught is not anything to do with how we should conceptualize, but it's about understanding dhammas starting at the moment. Yeah. And as understanding grows, then the conceptualizing, I guess, changes somehow,
yeah.
But doesn't necessarily reduce.
But one needs classification at the sticky points, you know.
Yes.
I have a question. Given that for an arahat, all thinking is with sobhana citta, is it all the time, if it's adosa, that it is metta necessarily, or just
metta itself, being as the object?
Right. So when there's a perception of a being, as in thinking about Sariputta,
must be metta.
It must be metta.
Or other reality, karuna, mudita.
Or just these few. Oh, okay.
Or none at all.
Or none?
Depending on that very moment.
I would think that there are moments when it's not metta, karuna, but just sopana, right?
Like now. Metta or karuna?
Or just sopana. No, but it cannot be for us.
But you're talking about if it's person as an object.
Yeah. If it's person as an object, then if the sopana must be metta
it
or karuna.
Yeah. You can use the word adosa, but not necessary to be metta.
So is it?
Just clarify. I thought that
because adosa arises with every kusala citta, but when beings are the object, then that adosa manifests as it is metta, and when it's not being as the object, it's just other kind of adosa.
You mean that any time you see being, there is
metta
with kusala?
No. When it is, I think Sukhin's question is no. When it is kusala citta, when it is kusala citta and being is the object, then there is metta when it's kusala.
Like now, so you mean that you are always metta?
She means that often when you think about people,
it's not kusala citta, but when it's kusala, then it's metta.
Saying it's not necessarily because
that's fine.
The question of whether, for example, it's metta or karuna, it's still the same adosa jetasika, but the way of thinking, if you like, is different, because in when it's karuna, one sees the person in need of help or something, and when it's metta, there is the wish for well-being. But it could be kusala with neither of those particular angles to it.
When a person is the object?
Yes.
Right.
Well, that's what I understand Ajahn to be saying. Well,
at least
that's why I brought up the case of arahat. The thing is, it's not always thinking in those particular situations as a lovingness of a person or the suffering of the other person. You know, there must be moments when it's not those concepts are not there. That situation is not. It's not thought in terms of those situations.
Can you give an example?
Just Sariputta, come here. You know.
No metta.
Can be, but is it always?
Can we say that at least there must be 19 citta-sikas when kusala citta arise? No need to have the karuna or mudita, because these two. Especially jetasikas, usually there must be adosa
right.
And tatara machatata
right.
As upeka.
And each time in that case, it's metta when it's adosa.
No need to think about whether it's metta or not, it's wholesome citta at that very moment.
For example, restraint from wrong speech with person as object. It may be that just the realization of the unwholesome nature rather than thinking of the well-being of the other person.
So
But Ajahn, are you saying it can be a dosa? A dosa does not necessarily mean there must...
A dosa arises with each wholesome jitta. Mm-hmm. So we don't talk about metta.
Okay.
Not necessary to have the four kinds of brahmavihara.
Okay.
Recently, I tentatively concluded that I do not understand what the metta is at all. Mean that for me...
To be friendly.
It's a difficult notion for me. For me, mudita, I can understand it, and compassion,
when?
Karuna.
When do you understand
it? Well, if I see a sort of a very happy couple or a happy family, I can have a mudita.
Lopa?
No, it's not
mudita.
Mudita.
How do you know?
Mudita.
Yeah, mudita, mudita.
When they...
Yeah, I do. And then karuna, okay, I do. I can understand. Metta, I cannot understand.
But
it's just being friendly.
Without metta, can you have karuna?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Surely whenever there is...
My questions can be whenever there is karuna or mudita, metta must be there, surely.
Understanding but I do not understand what... metta is difficult. What is metta? For me, it's more like attachment.
What about
very close to attachment.
Yeah. What about at moment when you are not angry with the other at that moment? It is kusala citta.
Yeah.
It is, but no idea about metta.
Metta is very hard to grasp.
Just a dosa, like no lobha, no dosa, no moha, when citta is kusala, that's all. But when you have metta, the feeling there is different from when you're just not angry.
Do you ever willingly help someone?
Yeah.
So wouldn't that be metta?
Yeah.
Not out of sympathy for the person, but just common courtesy and politeness?
Yeah. But yeah, I know that. But when I'm very nice to other people, I generally, when I give something to other people, then it's generosity. Mostly it's generosity.
What about just politeness and courtesy in the day to one's colleagues and so forth?
Yeah,
it's kusala?
Yeah, so I'm fine with sila.
So you always define whether it's karuna or whether it's sila or what?
No, I don't almost define. I'm saying, though everybody talks about development, metta is not an easy thing to see.
Can there be generosity?
Or giving an offering or having kindness without metta?
Yeah, metta is not easy to see.
I'm just saying at a moment of giving a gift or with kindness, can it be without metta?
Oh, of course with metta.
Must be with metta.
Yeah.
So generosity must be with metta.
So the point is that it's so close to attachment.
Do you like dukkha?
Dukkha, no.
At that moment, kusala or akusala citta?
It's not kusala.
But when you are not angry at it.
I am not angry.
You are not Dukkha's friend. This is different. Yeah.
Because you often say, you use snakes in your talks. Whenever I hear ugu, I fear.
That's dosa.
I just said that we can develop our metta to even ugu snakes, but
can we say that we do not have dosa and we do not have metta? We do not like to be Tukka's friend, but we do not have dosa. Is it possible? It does mean that any time when there is kusala, there is metta. only a dosa, no anger.
Even if we're thinking about that
insect, or at the moment of restraining from hurting the insect because one's not necessarily metta, is what you're saying? Orwing says it's adosa.
Adosa, adosa. Abstaining from hurting, killing.
But not necessarily metta.
No. Metta must be more than that.
More than that.
Yeah.
You say metta must be more than that. When I see the little ants and I don't want to step on them, so I make an effort. You say it's...
Kusala.
Kusala, but not metta.
Do you metta? To be friend? To be friendly?
To be a friend? No, I don't think I want to be a friend. To metta.
So only not dosa.
I see. So metta is more than that. It's different. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not.
But we try very often. We try very often to catch realities or to name them, or we think of the situation in a conventional way. So it's not panya, which knows exactly the characteristics.
Correct. That's right. That's
yeah.
True.
Will you give food to the ant?
No.
Not just step on it.
I'm not interested to give food to them. Mm-hmm. I would rather avoid.
Yeah, just avoid.
Yeah.
But when one avoids, one is restraining from akusala.
But this is all a situation. You know, this is all situations. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's a good clarification, though, because before we had
heard or discussed before, I remember from years ago that when it's thinking of another being or beings with kusala, then metta is there, but it seems it may just be a dosa, not
yeah.
So metta is stronger.
I didn't know that, really. Yeah. It's new to me.
Right.
It's new to me. Yeah.
Just a more refined...
More refined
comment, yes.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Really following on from one of Tadao's good questions yesterday, when he was asking about, we were talking about, well, life, just one moment, one citta, like seeing now, and everything is accumulated, nothing is lost. So as we were saying earlier, each understanding is accumulated, each moment of sanya is accumulated. Well, when we're talking about kusala and akusala, it's very easy to understand how each citta, each chetasika is accumulated, because that's the nature of kusala and akusala, that they accumulate. But what about, for example, the sanya that arises with a moment of vipaka, like the sanya which arises with the moment of seeing consciousness, and nothing is lost, but it's vipaka, so we can't talk about it being accumulated, but still there is remembrance of that sanya is not lost at all. What can
because as soon as you open your eyes, you know what's there.
Yes, because it's being remembered, and because it has.
So even though it's arising with vipaka cittas, it is accumulated.
But for the newly born baby, they not knowing anything at all, just seeing. Mm. But when we have more sanya, as soon as one opens one's eyes, what is there?
So but is it maybe not the sanya that thinks about what's seen, what's heard, that's accumulated?
So in that
sense, can one say that even though it's the sanya with vipaka, it is accumulated because it's not forgotten?
Could you dream about someone?
Of course.
Yes.
At that moment?
But that's just
without the memory of
what is seen.
What is seen.
It's like a memory. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one can say then in that case that every sanya, and by implication that means every citta seeker, is accumulated or not lost at all. So no, even vipaka citta or vipaka sanya is not lost, and it is
because one remembers,
accumulated because it is remembered,
different from the accumulation of kusala and akusala,
but still
the recall memory.
I had the same idea yesterday. Vipaka accumulated, can it be
a little blind spot?
Not as kusala and akusala to produce result.
But can we use the word accumulation?
It depends on what word, if you understand.
Yeah.
That why one remembers, why one just remembers.
Yeah. Difficult point.
And I think the main point is, even though it's result, it's vipaka, actually not lost. Not lost. No, it's still remembered or recalled. Or accumulated in that sense.
By then we can understand what's meant by pakatupanisiyapajya.
And one can understand also why
seeing or sanya or even vipaka citta or cetasika is conditioned by pakatupanisiyapajya too. So
even vipaka is pakatupanisiyapajya.
Conditioned by pakatupanisiyapajya.
Or conditioned by.
Yes. And the I know.
That's but difficult for me. As a pakatupanisiya is only because you think with kusala or with akusala, but not
only kusala or akusala.
Kusala or akusala.
Not only.
Not only. See? Yeah.
It's seeming to make sense that vipaka citta and the object would be remembered. Otherwise, I mean, that's the beginning of sanya, remembering the object and then going on in the process to think about, you know, conventionally, you know, the shape and form, conventionally knowing the object.
Yes.
Yeah, without that, I'd actually never thought that it wouldn't.
But the point is that usually when we talk about accumulations means habits or tendencies, and it just refers to kusala or akusala, and we talk about kusala or akusala as accumulations, as conditioned by pakatupanisiyapajya. But this moment of seeing now, the seeing itself is conditioned by pakatupanisiyapajya.
Yeah. So
what is pakatupanisiyapajya? See?
But you just said that the accumulation of kusala and akusala is different. It's not the same as vipaka, and that I don't get yet.
Because vipaka arises to experience an object.
Yeah.
Finished. No more.
Yeah.
Because it's the result. Yeah. But the akusala and kusala, which follows, continues on.
Continues on. Yeah.
And when you say what is pakatupanisiyapajya, I mean, sometimes we might think of it as in terms of accumulations, but actually it's the natural decisive support condition. So it's the decisive condition that brings, that conditions any citta or citta seeker.
So now, so what are the pakatupanisiyapajya? What are the pakatupanisiyapajya?
Very wide. Many.
What are they? What are they?
Any dharma from the past.
Doesn't it include seeing, hearing, and the memory of what is seen?
What is seen.
Yes. Any citta seeker, any seeing from the past, any sanya with any seeing that can condition citta now.
Citta now.
But
mostly vipaka, result condition, right? I hope I have the name right, but is it not? Well, pakatupanisya pachaya can be a condition for the arising of seeing. There's also the result condition. What's that?
We're talking about what is
pakatupanisya pachaya itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't mean result.
No, that in itself, it doesn't.
So that was the question, okay, what is pakatupanisya
pachaya? I missed the question then.
And the answer is any reality, so any even seeing in the past or thinking or like or dislike is a condition.
On the question, Nina, of pakatupanisya conditioning vipaka, we were talking on Saturday about the person who is what Tadao would call visually oriented person, like an artist or a photographer. And because they pay a lot of attention to the visible object, their ratio of, say, visible object to what is heard, which they may not pay much attention to, may be much higher than a person who is, say, oriented towards sound and pays a lot of attention to sounds and not so interested in the visual field.
Yes.
So because they pay more attention to that, there may be many more moments of that kind of vipaka than the other kind.
Yes. So one can, in that example, one can say
that seeing, even though it's vipaka citta, can be conditioned by, can be pakatupanisya pachaya itself, and seeing, which is vipaka citta, like now, has to be conditioned by pakatupanisya pachaya.
The main condition must be kamma for any vipaka, but it also have or needs the pakatupanisya pachaya to have such and such vipaka.
But can you explain some more about exactly, because what John was just explaining seemed to be like a situation which we think is sometimes confusing, because John said that if someone has the inclination to listen, to hear, he would have more vipaka, but that's like, I just plug in earbuds and listen to music, but that's just one chetana to listen. But what follows, it's not like each time this condition, this pakatupanisya, the inclination to condition each moment of hearing. But I think you are saying that at the moment of hearing itself, it's not kamma, but there's another.
It must be result of kamma condition too,
right?
For and also supported by pakatupanisya pachaya.
Like what?
Like that interest which accumulates in that object, for example.
But okay, I have an interest. Like I gave the example of listening to music, say, and I, put in headphones and listen. And as John was trying to describe, that is an explanation for the inclination conditioning a lot of hearing. But it's not like each instance of hearing is with that.
I don't think he's saying that. I think he's saying that, like, for example,
hearing now, everyone knows, is primarily a result of karma.
Right.
But that karma cannot bring that result without the accumulation, the accumulation of attachment, the accumulation of interest.
Let me put it this way. Someone has the accumulation for hearing, but does not have the accumulation for seeing. But yet he sees, and yet there is pakatupanisya also. What is the explanation for that?
You mean he doesn't have accumulation for seeing?
So you're saying that pakatupanisya for all, right? For all, because someone who experiences through all the five senses, so in each case there would be pakatupanisya. So what was the point of saying that someone prefers seeing and sees, and someone hears more?
Indicating that the So now we are paying pretty close attention to what is being said, right? So there's a lot of attention to the sound being experienced through the ear door. So presumably at those moments there's not the attention being paid to what is being seen. So if the kamma is there, then that attention will mean that there is more more mind moments, if you like, experiencing or thinking about what has been heard than thinking about what is being seen. So we may not be aware of people moving around behind us. They are. To some extent, the seeing is there. They're being noticed, but not in the same way as if we were paying attention to who's moving and not so much attention to what is being spoken.
So that sounds like Pakatupanesya, to think about objects, one object over another.
I'm talking about the interest in the object. That's accumulated tendency.
And you're saying also that interest conditions the vipaka.
Well, in the sense that there's more attention being paid to what is being said than what is being seen. So the moments of the ratio, if you like, of experiencing through the ear door versus the eye door.
And yet there is the eye door.
And yet there is the eye door.
And there's no interest.
Just because there's, I wouldn't say no interest, but not as much interest.
So it works as Pakatupanesa either way. When there's interest?
Yeah, that's what we're saying, that Pakatupanesya
is very wide and
is wide.
And
it needs more than just kamma condition. Well, needs the Pakatupanesya condition also.
Only understanding if vipaka is the result of kamapaja is enough. Or not enough.
First, we have to understand what is seeing, what is hearing, to even have an idea that it is just a Dhamma. And as I understand it, it's one of the Vipassana Yanas that know that it is, whether it is in terms of kamma and vipaka.
No matter how much one study or understand the patya, it's just for understanding reality right now as not self.
And it's just, for example, to why does
seeing occur now and see this visible object, or why does hearing arise now and hear this particular sound? So by understanding that it's karma supported by other conditions like Pakatupanesya Paccaya, it just helps to explain the intricacy of why it has to be this particular Dhamma that arises now and not another. It doesn't mean one has to work out all the details or find the thin line, but just to know that nothing is lost, and in that sense everything is accumulated.
It's helpful.
Yeah, just that many things are at that moment, not just here.
Yeah. Think of a kid focusing
on the video game, for example, totally absorbed in it. So, other sense door impressions.
Very
less. Yeah.
And a visible object is Pakatupanesya
Paccaya, because if there's no seeing of that visible object, we can't say that it would it conditions any cheater and cheater seekers on its own. Okay.
Memory.
Just memory of it. Okay, so also visible object. Anything more about just this moment, Tadao?
Not about this moment, but I'd like to go back to that issue of metta, yeah? Okay. And you'd say no, yeah? But anyway, I put, okay. To me, in my understanding, Buddhists have a Buddhism has two aspects, yeah? One is egocentric quest. The other one is allocentric quest, yeah? So trying to understand Dhamma and then trying to develop Dhamma and Sati and Panya and get enlightened. It's very much an egocentric, yeah, self-centered quest, isn't it? The other quest is helping others and so very sympathetic to other people. Yeah, that is allocentric, other-centered, other-oriented. I'm saying, you know, I know you say it's no, but that two endeavor, yeah, are linked by the notion of kusala. Okay? Developing understanding oneself is a kusala, and helping others is kusala, yeah? Okay? It's linked by the notion of kusala, both the kusala deeds, okay? Here is my question. Suppose that 50,000 from now, yeah? Then there would be no teaching of Gautama Buddha, yeah? Yeah? At that time, suppose that there would be Pacheka Buddha, yeah? What kind of teaching does he sort of perceive? At least there's no Vinaya, yeah? No Sutta, yeah? But he may have a personal computer and he does type down, write down all his teaching or become enlightened about his experiences, yeah? And so there will be Abhidhamma, yeah? In his Abhidhamma, do we still have the notion of kusala or not? Is my question.
He doesn't have to hear the teachings because he's Pacheka Buddha, so he doesn't have to hear in that lifetime. He's heard in previous lifetimes. He doesn't have to have a text of Abhidhamma or Vinaya or anything, but he develops complete understanding of the teachings, but not able to convey to others.
So Tadao's question is, if he's writing a blog, would he mention kusala?
Yeah, kusala is it slightly different from Samasabuddha's teaching or not?
Yeah. Actually, it's the same teaching, but he cannot convey or share with others.
No, he may write. He has to write.
That is as good as teaching.
No, he doesn't teach.
He doesn't teach. He just writes a blog.
I want. Let's go back to your initial premise. The two purposes of the Buddha, and one seems quite egocentric. What you said sounds like the path of ditti, doing this for me. It's not understanding for the sake of understanding. It's the understanding for the sake of self, which means there isn't much understanding there at all. And then your other path that, you know, some are more inclined towards, you know, metta and helping people and doing good deeds. And I guess the question there arises, for whom? Is there a force, or is one doing that for oneself or for the sake of kusala? So I kind of was questioning your initial premise there.
I think to study Dhamma and to somehow try to develop sati and panya is quite egocentric, I think, in a sense.
That's what Anne is saying. If it's correct, then it can't be.
Cannot be in the right path.
Right. If you're talking about understanding, then it's understanding. The question is, if someone knowing the Dhamma makes that judgment that this is egocentric and the other is more, you know, what's the word? Edocentric? Allocentric? Then I think he wouldn't realize, he doesn't realize that he does not know the path, he does not know the purpose of the Dhamma, and what he thinks is wholesome is probably not wholesome. So it is he who is more egocentric, whereas the other person, although he does not have the inclination to help others, he knows that the goal of the Dhamma is to understand whatever appears.
I think the egocentric part is what other people say about Buddhism, Dhamma, out of ignorance. And they use terms such as navel gazing and wrapped up in your own mental states and so forth. That may be how some people also approach Dhamma, but it's not the teaching of the Buddha at all.
And I think a lot of that perception by others comes from people going off into the quiet and sitting and trying to shut out the world. That's sort of the Western perception of it. Yeah. Anyway, I think I agree with you. It's the perception of others, but it also can be this perception of people who think they're following the path. They won't see themselves as being self-oriented, but if they're doing it for the sake of themselves and bettering themselves and enlightening themselves, then they're missing the point.
Oh, so what is your view? What is the right path in terms of these two banquets?
Well, Ajahn has always talked about develop understanding for the sake of understanding. Mm-hmm. Listen to understand.
That there's no self at all. Mm-hmm.
And so there is no such
dichotomy.
And just when you brought up the question about Pacheka Buddha, John was about to say something earlier. Oh, was it? When he asked his question about the Pacheka Buddha earlier.
We have to understand who's Pacheka Buddha before we can say anything.
And how do you describe, how do you understand that, or how do we understand that?
He's right, Panya is not equal to the Sammasambuddha. See, but Panya must be so great that without the teaching, he can become enlightened by his accumulation. So who knows who will be Pacheka or who will be Savaka if Buddha didn't tell that this person will be Pacheka in the future.
So what you're saying, Ajahn, is that although his understanding is not as great as the Sammasambuddha, but he understands the same Dhamma.
Exactly. More than Sariputta. Much more.
That's why he's a Buddha.
So, if he were to write a blog, he would write what's in the text, the Abhidhamma.
To whom and for whom?
No, just see? Ideally.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But perhaps I'm mistaken, but isn't that Pacheka Buddha one that does not teach?
Why?
I may be understanding it incorrectly.
His Panya is greater than Sariputta.
Yes.
But so why?
No one to learn.
No one.
No one what?
No one to learn.
No one who can understand.
No one.
Okay, I see.
No. It's too profound to be understood.
At the time, the Sammasambuddha was... he's always, his last birth will be at a time where there are people, enough number of people who would understand, appreciate his teachings. But the Pacheka Buddha is not bound with that situation. You know?
Not at that time, and he doesn't have the skills of the Sammasambuddha to explain to those with no understanding.
So Pacheka Buddha can see that even if he try hard, there would be no person, even a single person, who would understand. Oh.
Probably something like the Buddha was hesitant to teach because of the depth. But then he, the Brahma invited him, and he realized there were many with little dust in their eyes.
Jan will disagree. She'll say not hesitant.
For a moment, I mean, because no. of the depth of understanding.
No.
Yes.
Let's hear it, Jan.
Yes.
This is a common misunderstanding. Not hesitant. Just because he paused doesn't mean he was hesitant.
He was.
Because. At that very moment, he just think about the depth and of
that's
the teaching.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I mean. The depth of the Only Dharma. That. Who would understand that? You know.
No, it's not like that. He just took a few moments, took a little time to consider the details, the depth of the teaching, and considered who he could explain to and how he would, but he didn't hesitate to teach.
But he did have that perception that it's so deep nobody could understand.
So people thought that that is hesitation, but it's not. It's only the moment of thinking like that.
Yeah, it's a moment, okay, but that's what I mean. So he thought it was too deep for anyone to understand.
When people say hesitated, it means they think that he wondered whether or not to teach.
No. It's just a moment. Just one
that's
moment.
Your understanding.
Just one moment.
Yeah, but
no. He didn't go.
Not questioning whether he really can teach or whether people can understand.
It was depth of the teaching.
And
the
some translated as he was discouraged.
Okay, so what I'm saying is that the Buddha saw the depth, but
at
then he also saw that there were many who
that
could learn.
At very moment of thinking like that, people thought that he hesitated.
But in the case of Pacheka Buddha, he sees the depth, but he also cannot find anyone who can understand, probably.
And in the Pacheka Buddha's time, many people who were very interested in developing right understanding, and they went, and some went to see the Pacheka Buddha, and he said something that can condition right understanding of the others, and that person could become enlightened from his accumulation, but he had listened to just very small little word from Pacheka Buddha. Not as in details like Sammasambuddha.
But can be a seed for understanding to develop.
So as Sarah was saying, he just didn't have the ability to teach like a Sammasambuddha.
Not equal.
Yeah.
Even though it's not just that they're not interested,
even if they're interested, he doesn't have the skill or the ability in words to convey the
unless someone like Achan just said approach who had very high accumulation and could understand just a little bit,
even just a seed, not in
detail about the teachings,
but enough to condition panya.
That's my understanding.
But it's not from his word, but it's from his accumulation. Otherwise, he would be Sammasambuddha.
He doesn't have the skill in language or the words to convey it.
That's why there were many Pacheka Buddha in the time of Pacheka Buddha.
So maybe people just went to pay respect, but not the...
As much...
I mean, maybe learn about Kusila, but not about.
Yeah, I knew that Pacheka Buddha didn't have, or doesn't have as much skill as the Sammasambuddha in teaching. I didn't know that he is also, he tend to be born or at the time of no sort of environment. It's called Kala Sampada. Is it Kala Sampada?
Whatever.
But you knew he was born when there was no teaching in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Remaining.
Yeah.
And then so that would indicate it was
he
not the right time.
Skill, as much skill as some of them. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that at that time how anybody who would understand his teaching, even if he endeavored to teach.
For example, people today can understand the teachings of Sammasambuddha. But if there's no the teachings of the Sammasambuddha and only Paccekabuddha, what about people enough to understand?
Sort of studying and studying Dhamma and developing Satyampanya is not, cannot be regarded as just one's sake. It's nothing to do with egocentric motivation.
At moment of understanding, there is the understanding of no I.
What if you understood that the Dhamma is a way to tackle the problem of ignorance, and you see ignorance as a real problem? So you study, because you realize that there's so much ignorance, you study. Is that egocentric? Because you see the, and you know that without the Dhamma, the ignorance continues.
From your
study of the Dhamma, do you have more concern, regard, respect, tolerance towards other people, or less?
Yeah.
So,
and it's not egocentric.
I learn more to understand that there is no Dhamma.
You could say, is there more or less idea of Tadao?
So you think that studying Dhamma for the sake of becoming a nice person, then it's egocentric.
It's not studying of the Dhamma.
Because it's for me.
One studied Dhamma to be a sort of a much nicer person because one really doesn't appreciate one's Achillesa. Yeah.
Sorry, could you say that again?
One studied Dhamma because one doesn't appreciate one's Achillesa and see the danger of Achillesa, having Achillesa. In a sense, it's trying to. It's not a good
word. But as long as it's still you, it's not understanding Dhamma.
Like some people have the idea of studying Dhamma to improve their personality change their personality or have less akusala.
Yeah.
But actually, it's not knowing anything about Dhamma because it's all conditioned by clinging to self, wanting oneself to have more metta, to have less anger. So it's not actually anything to do with understanding Dhamma.
So possibly for
most of us, that's how it began, in fact. But then one knew nothing about the Dhamma really, just had an idea of wanting to be someone different.
I mean, it can be an egocentric thing, right? But then having an interest in the other side doesn't mean that's not egocentric either, right? So if you think that this is egocentric, then you must also ask yourself whether that is not egocentric. Just doesn't mean that in this case you perceive that it's self-interest, it's egocentric, that somehow becomes not egocentric. But it's very likely that everything is egocentric. Even the idea of developing other kinds of kusala would be likewise. And then you come back that to the Dhamma as being the solution to all that problem of ego and everything else.
I came across a note that I'd taken last year when I was here. And Ajahn, I think you said something like, we don't, thinking about studying the Dhamma to become enlightened can only lead you to the trap of becoming enlightened for yourself and attachment to the idea of becoming enlightened.
Speak slowly.
Oh. Sorry. that thinking about studying Dhamma mm-hmm. for the purpose of becoming enlightened, mm-hmm. You can fall into a trap of thinking the self becoming enlightened having attachment to the idea of becoming enlightened. That really the only way to successfully avoid these traps mm-hmm. is to think about understanding realities.
Why?
Because, like we just said, otherwise it's all for me.
For me to become enlightened. Yeah. So it's wrong path, wrong practice right from the beginning. So instead of it leading to more understanding, which will eventually lead to enlightenment, it leads in the opposite direction of the wrong path, more and more wrong view, more and more clinging to results for me.
And can you say also we have absolutely no idea about what enlightenment is?
Mm-hmm. And so the concept is just a concept of clinging, for clinging.
Sounds
so,
good.
Yeah.
So in that sense, enlightenment is a byproduct of our endeavor.
Egocentric byproduct.
Egocentric byproduct. Forget about it.
See, just the word understanding,
which we take most of the time take for granted. When we hear the Dhamma, we have to know what is understanding. What does it understand? So that baby step is not even really firm. Enlightenment is supposed to be the highest understanding.
Sister Janet, what a friend on our list always
says is, oh, but the Buddha sometimes teaches for those who don't have accumulations to develop much understanding, just to do good or be a good person or avoid evil, and he didn't teach everyone has to develop understanding because not everyone has the accumulation, so he encouraged other kinds of good even if there is no understanding of Dhammas as anatta.
Any comment?
Well, I think that when he's the Buddha and his word, every word concerned the related to panya.
Because completely understanding about
Dhammas. Mm. Dhammas are all anatta. And what we were talking about, Karuna, Metta Karuna Mudita. And I remember once before in a discussion you were asking people whether they have more Metta, Karuna, Mudita, different accumulations. But I always wondered afterwards, because like you just mentioned this morning, actually cannot be Karuna or Mudita without Metta. So actually the answer is for anyone, there must be more metta, because there can be metta without karuna or mudita. But for there to be karuna or mudita, there must be metta.
Because you see that we better think about realities instead of the term, because if we would like to know what characteristic is, what reality is metta, we cannot find except adosa. But it does mean that whenever there is kusala citta, there is metta. So it depends on that very moment, whether it is just no anger, adosa, or be friendly.
But the point is that when it is metta, there can be, like when we meet people or the insects, there are opportunities for metta to arise very, very commonly in the day. But for Karuna, for example, unless there is an instance of suffering or being concerned for the welfare, then mudita doesn't arise. But even when mudita arises, like when one would like to help someone who's having some difficulty, but there must
karuna.
Be karuna, but there must be metta also at that. There must be metta, there
friendly.
Must be to be friendly,
yeah.
Otherwise
adosa is there.
Adosa is there, otherwise one wouldn't help. So when you asked whether people have more metta, karuna, or mudita, but actually must be more metta, because even at the moments of karuna or mudita, must be metta.
At the moment of helping the other, like metta and karuna, see? Without metta, if that person is not your friend, see?
It cannot be true.
Yeah.
Metta and karuna, mudita and upekkha, yeah? It seems to be like it depends on story. You create. It's not like based on actual reality of one moment.
I don't think so. I think it's just like at this moment, at a moment of this opportunity to help. Like, you just stood up to help or to explain the Dharma. That moment, metta can arise instantly. It's not a story. It's not thinking about a person and
this
opportunity.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so when there is compassion, like you see someone who's sick or having trouble understanding the Dharma, so it can be compassion instantly.
Yeah, just think about all the refugees in EU, and it's when we cannot help from having compassion.
Or dosa.
It's all dosa. Yeah, but it's based on stories, on TV.
In the context of a story, but then everything's in the context of a story, isn't it? What we're thinking now is in the context of a story. So the kusala that arises now, or the akusala, is all in the context of a story about people and things and situation.
So you are saying that even though we arise based on context of story, the moments of realities, which either compassion or mudita, yeah?
Is a result of accumulated tendency, not the story.
When you see the pictures on TV and think about the refugees, any unpleasant feeling? No unpleasant feeling.
So can we say that if metta is developed, then mudita and karuna also, chances of mudita and karuna also increases?
We cannot say exactly if we have, it depends on each moment. For example, Kun Duong Dien saw a snail on the concrete road. She tried to help it and took it to the grass. Yeah. For me, okay, I have no anger. But I didn't do that. So what do you think? Whether I have metta less or I have metta more than karuna? Not enough to help, but I'm friendly. I will not hurt.
And so what about upekkha? Upekkha is tathamajjata, but it also arises with alopa adosa.
But it has to be panya.
And it's panya, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, what was that?
Ubekha is conditioned by panya. The panya not necessarily
of satipatthana.
So many levels.
Mm-hmm.
Just wise considering about karma or something.
That's why the other three cannot attain the fifth jhana.
I thought the reason the other three cannot attain the
fifth jhana is because there has to be reflection on a
there
concepts.
Can be the development of ubekha at any time, but not to the degree of jhana.
So why can ubekha
be developed to fifth but not the other three?
Because the ubekha has to arise with ubekha vedana in
okay.
different feeling.
Oh, of course. So an earlier when someone mentioned, so
everyone agrees metta is adosa cetasika or one kind of adosa cetasika, and it was said karuna mudita are adosa, and you is that correct?
Different cetasikas.
What cetasikas? Karuna.
Karuna cetasika and mudita cetasika.
But what is karuna mudita cetasika? Because, they do have their chetasika, right, different chetasika, not adosa chetasika, yeah.
Oh, they are separate chetasikas.
Yeah.
See?
Well, that's why I'm correct, because someone said it not quite right. I'm saying see.
But there must be adosa.
It must arise with adosa, but not adosa.
I have a question about saupadisesa nibbana and anupadisesa nibbana. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And saupadisesa nibbana is nibbana attained by some individual and who haven't passed away from this world yet. Yeah. And good example is the Sammasambuddha. Yeah? And when we read his scripture, we can see that he is totally sort of void of defilements. Yeah, and we can see that he doesn't have. He's we can see that he has attained Nibbana in this lifetime, and so that it becomes a pieces of evidence that Nibbana is attainable and somebody has actually attained. But how about in the case of Anupadisesa Nibbana? How do we know that somebody has attained Anupadisesa Nibbana?
It means the death of
Anupadisesa. Yeah. So how can we know that nothing is followed after his
death? No more khandhas.
Yeah, so it's something we have to believe, isn't it?
No. When one knows what condition each moment now, then there is no such condition. How can there be any conditioned reality arising?
But it's kind of interesting, isn't it? It's when you somehow think all the conditions and then come to a conclusion that
no conditions for anything to arise anymore.
But my point is there are no pieces of evidence that he has attained the final Nibbana.
Well, it could be the same for Magajita, because you say we can see the Buddha had no defilements, but you can't really, because some of the language he used in some of the suttas, like foolish man and so forth, you don't know just from the word what is the citta, but you accept or not what is said. So it's only when understanding is developed more and more that one comes, as Ajahn said, one comes to understand what are the conditions. So at this stage, we don't know that enlightenment is possible. We have to accept that.
And you question that, and I wonder why you don't question whether or not
there's Nibbana.
I have no doubt.
You have no doubt about Nibbana?
And why don't you question whether there is
rebirth, whether there is Patisandhi at the end of this life too?
Yeah, so that's my point.
Yeah, my point
if
too.
If somebody asks, please show me evidence.
No objective empirical evidence.
It all comes back to the understanding at this moment and how and why the next citta arises and the causes for that citta, and understanding of the conditioned nature of reality and the conditions for becoming. But without that understanding, there will always be doubts or confusion. And if nothing is understood about citta and its arising and the conditions for its arising now, then there will never be confidence, firm confidence in next life, Patisandhi, and other lives, or in arahatship or parinibbana.
Maybe you have inclination for Japanese Buddhism.
I do not know much about Japanese Buddhism.
Oh no, they believe in that the
realm where the Buddhas go, all the Buddhas go and stay, yeah, something like that.
So the Tibetans, they believe in a gap
or a break, and then before more rebirths, another rebirth or something like this.
Something.
Yeah, Bardo. But all of it, no understanding of citta and the nature of citta and the nature of conditions for citta at this moment, such as seeing.
This year, probably in the spring, I guess, after I came back from Thailand, two of my sisters were visiting from Toronto, and they're both very devout Christians and both very active in their churches on the teaching side and have prayer groups. And it was interesting speaking with them because they were sincerely interested, and I was trying to speak to them about why it was interesting to me, or why it appealed to me, and something about the Dhamma. And everything I said, they made a comparison to Christianity and to God. And the longer we had this conversation, I mean, I kept going with it because they were sincerely interested, and I didn't. I tried to. Well, no, not God. But it was very interesting that, and I don't think I've had as deep a conversation with devout Christians before, but it was very interesting the importance to them of referring back to Christianity.
Could you be more specific?
Oh, I'll have to remember here. Do Buddhists pray?
Pray.
And I said, well, no. And they said, oh, right, there's no God, so there's no one to pray to. But we, you know, it was continuing along that line. It was quite interesting, actually. But I found it wasn't difficult either. It was just interesting.
So that's why we can see if there's
a strong interest in understanding more about life, that it can lead to right path or wrong path. And if it's wrong path, it just goes further and further wrong. And But maybe conditions for considering a little, who knows?
At least they would discuss it with you. And
so that was a good sign.
It's interesting because it's the first time they've
asked. It's the first time they've ever asked, and they were quite sincere, and they decided they wanted to do this when they came, and we'll see if it gets pursued. But they did make some comment about, well, you never push it on anyone. No. Because I think I know one spread the word is part of Christianity, so...
Buddhism is different from Islam, like other religions. They try to convert other people to their given religions. We are different. We are very much like, do you know what the word butterfly effect? Mm-hmm. When butterfly flies on somewhere in Canada, that small vibration of the air may cause a big storm several months ago in Southeast Asia. That is just a butterfly effect. So when we talk Dhamma, at least when I have a chance to talk with Dhamma, I never try to convince other people. Just give a condition, just simple condition, and if time comes, he would understand, he would go to the next step. And that's, I think, a Buddhist attitude, and it's totally different from other religions.
In other words, be a Kalyana Mita, so one helps when there's an opportunity, as best one can in whatever way, and then it's up to conditions whether no expectation.
And the thing about Dhamma is it's about life now. So anyone who's interested in understanding what's appearing, what's life, nobody can argue with that there's seeing, there's hearing. So you can always come back to that, refer to that. I was just thinking, when Tada brought this up, and that the Greek philosopher Plato, he talked about, he gave a simile of someone walking into a cave and discovering reality and coming back to the cave and teaching. He realized that that would not, not advisable, because if you understand and you come back and teach to someone who does not understand, they may feel threatened and, it's like no point. So in a way, the Dhamma also cannot be understood. But then I realized that there's a difference, that Dhamma is about what each of us perceive in a day. So you can always talk about it.
And one doesn't have to call it Buddhism or just one can use whatever language is known or used by the other person, talking about life.
I think that is a very important point. Like when we communicate with other people, say there are two people, two persons, then one has one's idea, the other one has another, not just idea, one's language, the other one has other's idea and language, the one has to find the common ground, so common language and common ideas. Based on that, in that common field, one has to communicate. If we just say Dhamma and Nama Rupa, then people won't listen at all.